Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
So I give presentations on presentations, and what I have never realised, what I do now, is following Liz Crow is perhaps the hardest thing that you ever do in a presentation. I also know that the best way to start a presentation is with an attention grabber. I have that, but I also just want you to relax a bit. This talk has a happy ending, okay? We're okay. And I'm just going to move over here. I'm going to start my talk. Fuck. That moment when you realize something you have done has caused significant harm. Fuck. It'll come to every single one of you. There are those in the room who know. People laughing at someone saying that word. You're embarrassed, and I apologize if anyone's offended, but you know deep down that moment, crushing fear, utter despair. You just don't know what to do. Simon shared that moment. Fuck. So I'm going to tell you a story, because stories work, don't they? I'm going to tell you about my moment. I'm an oncology surgeon, and one of the tumors we operate on is something called a Wilms tumor, a nephroblastoma. That's a malignant tumor of the kidney. In the UK, the way that that's managed is we take a biopsy of the affected kidney, give appropriate chemotherapy for 6 weeks, and then go and take the affected tumor out. So we had this kid, biopsied the tumor, chemo started. Halfway through the chemo, the ultrasound suggested there was another tumor on the other kidney. This is what we call metachronous. It's not spread, but it's another tumor. So the policy there is that we take out the affected kidney at 6 weeks and also biopsy the other kidney so we know how it's been affected by the chemo, then we can give more chemotherapy. So we did this. 6 weeks later, we then go back to biopsy and hopefully treat the affected solitary kidney. Deliver the kidney out onto the surface, and the tumor that's supposed to be at the apex isn't there, which is good. But I'm a clever oncology surgeon, although you wouldn't know, so we'll get a radiologist involved to come into theater and do an ultrasound and have a look and see if it's just under the surface. Nothing. So we put the kidney back inside the abdomen, carry on operating. Half hour later, I get a call from the recovery area to say this kid has passed no urine in the last half hour. So I popped out. You know when that little bell rings? Popped out, checked the catheter, gave a fluid bolus, and arranged for an ultrasound, which was a bit weird, but thought that's a thing to do, arrange for an ultrasound, went back to operating, not because I'm heartless, but because I have an operating list to do. Carried on. Ultrasound on the phone half an hour later, there is no perfusion to the solitary kidney. Fuck. So I've put the kidney in upside down. Those of you notice, say I brought the kidney out this way. When we delivered it out onto the surface, there, at the apex, is the tumor. It had been down the bottom. You might think that's obvious. Kidneys are not as easily identified as you think they might be in figuring out what the anatomy is. But I, through my actions, put this child in renal failure. So, what to do? Told the parents. They were fine. We explained what was going to go on. And the child will come back to. Don't worry, it's not a sad ending. What do we do when we have our moments? I'm not going to say the word too often, but you know what I'm saying, yeah? When we have those, we have a serious untoward incident, a case review, a hospital review, or whatever special magic word they use in your hospital. And we sit down and we look at what the problem is, and we come up with an answer, and that's okay. And we decide where the error occurred, why the error occurred. And you sort of know, and you think it was probably something to do with the fact there were two consultant surgeons operating. So we weren't sure who was in charge, who was the more senior one. So I deferred to one, he deferred to me. Maybe we were pleased that the tumor appeared to have shrunk. Maybe we were rushing. Maybe I was concerned about nephron-sparing surgery. Maybe I wasn't as good as I thought I could be. Maybe I wasn't as good as I should be. Maybe I really am not as good as I should be. Maybe I'm a bit shit. Maybe this is where it ends. Maybe it's all about this. That's it, isn't it? You've had your moments. It's not just the question of the clinical case. The clinical case is hugely important. And this talk is not about the clinical case. This talk is about that. This talk is about us, the broken people. About how my internal dialogue tried to destroy me. The kid was fine. The kid had went on renal dialysis for a week. That was probable from the surgery that we're going to do. We found the tumor. We resected the tumor. The kid was fine. That was 5 years ago. But I was the broken vase. And if you think about it, the causes of the vase falling, the vase is us, by the way, that's not the child. The causes of the vase falling might have been very, very small if you look at your friends and colleagues who look a bit broken. You didn't even see the slightest gust of wind that knocked them over. It might have been a significant case. It is children who die. But it might be so small that nobody even knew what caused your moment. You recognized that you were going to prescribe the wrong drug at the wrong time to the wrong patient, and you didn't even do it. It might have been somebody giving you advice about your performance. It might be about your race, your sex, your sexuality, about patients, about time, about your career, about where you're going and why you're going to that place. It doesn't matter what caused that moment. And actually, the causation is not the issue. Because in the causation, in the serious case review, we look at the errors and we detail what was going on, and that's about the patient. The thing that breaks us is our response to that. And sometimes our friends and our colleagues can't understand why we are so broken. We go back to Liz's talk. How can you be so upset by that? It was just inadequate documentation. That's because of the effect on us. And I am here to be positive. I'm not here to be negative. I'm here to encourage you that there is some hope in this. The effects of this, however, can be significant. If you think of the analogy of the vase that falls and breaks, sometimes, like this one, the visual aid didn't really work. It's pretty good. Some of us are incredibly resilient. I'm going to try this one more time. But that's true, isn't it? Sometimes there are amazing shocks hitters, and you watch something and you just think it just bounces off, it doesn't affect you. And sometimes you look at people and you think they are pretty severely damaged by that, but there are only slight cracks or flaws. And sometimes it really was the smallest incident and they are utterly broken. It's not our role to determine what is grief, as Liz told us. There is grief. It's not our role to determine what is broken, because you could still use that as a vase, couldn't you? There's a few of us are like that. We sort of go on, we're just a bit broken. There's a few of us are chipped around the top, but all of us are just a bit broken. Now, what have I got to say on that? Well, I want to move on from what Simon said and talk to you about Descartes. Descartes said, the enemy of good is perfect. I mentioned this last year. It's not my only talk that I just have to get Descartes in there every opportunity. Descartes said, the enemy of good is perfect. And that is part of what breaks us. None of you are perfect. I am sorry to be the bearer of bad news. And you know what? Chasing perfectionism is part of what breaks the vase. Not one single one of us are perfect. You may not have had your moment yet. It is coming. I am really sorry, but we can help you. None of us is perfect. That's it. It's not of lack of effort. It's not of lack of care. It's not of lack of study. It's not of anything apart from the huge complexity of what we do. Hugely complex. It is not like flying an aeroplane. The enemy of good is perfect describes the problem. And one of the problems we have is that when you go to your case review or serious incident approach or M&M meetings, we decide on what the problem was. And so we write that down and say, we shouldn't have only one surgeon operating. We should have two surgeons operating. And they should identify who is the most senior in decision making. We should have a checklist for the septic child who comes in. We should have this, we should have that. And the implication, therefore, is that if we do that, we will reduce error and this would not have happened. Therefore, this is somebody's fault and you are to blame. They don't say that. But I know it was my fault. And so do you. And I'm sorry. But that is not the case. Error is ubiquitive, not indicative. I had to look both of those words up. Ubiquitive means it happens to everyone. Indicative means nothing. Just because you had an error, it does not mean you are bad. As a doctor, as a nurse, as a pharmacist, as a social worker, as a father or mother or anyone, it happens. How we deal with that is how we are defined. What do you think? Should we just chuck it out? Because you are thinking about it. Those of you who are brave are trying to believe you were the vase at the beginning. Those of you who are a bit broken, and I'm sorry, are thinking that this is you. Is this what we should do? Just throw it away? Invisalign's work. Kintsugi is the Japanese art of repairing broken pottery. And it struck me that this is a beautiful analogy, because every single one of you looks like this. Kintsugi. And the amazing thing is that I don't know how it happens. So I'm not here to tell you, I'm not here to give you counseling and say, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, and you've got to do the other. Kintsugi is to see the value in the piece, to repair it, and give it greater future value. And that's you. That's me. To see the value in the piece, that the piece is not only useful if it is perfect. Because that's where most of us are when we're a bit broken. That I'm not perfect, so I can't be as good as Sean. He's better than me. If only Sean had been there, if only he had done it. No, it's to see the value in me. To see the value in me as a person, not just a functionary, not just a robot, not just someone who does, but someone who is, someone who cares, someone who grows and is going to be different. To see the value in the piece as a person and make it more valuable by repair. How do we repair? Kintsugi. I think it's about an ethos. It's not about more checklists. It's not about more blame. It's not about more supervision, because what we do day in, day out, hour after hour, minute after minute, is hugely complex. We have to recognize that error will happen. What we should do is focus on making things better, not on stopping error. And those two are not the corollary. How can we make things better? This team is great. How can we make it better? Is not the same as saying, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, we'll get somebody off the subs bench and things will be better. It's an ethos. It's an ethos of honesty. The reason I'm telling you about my error is not so you think I'm an amazing person. Would you let me operate on your child after I put the kidney in upside down? Probably not, unless I put it in context and say what I've learned from that and where I'm going. And then I'm honest in saying, these are my expectations of the surgery, and these are the expectations of my team. The ethos is of improving performance. It's about changing from what the to what is the frame. Why did this happen is about why can we make this better. It's about that gentle touch on your arm from Sean, my colleague, which means everything. It's about a knowing smile and saying, you know what? I did exactly the same. It's about an acceptance that performance is not perfection. If you think about it, no cricket team wins without losing a wicket, but they can still beat the Poms. I'm Scottish, so. The ethos of improvement, so that for me, it's recognizing that I am a bit broken, but I am also healed with gold. And I don't know how that happened, but it has to do with the culture within which I work, with the colleagues that I work with, and our approach to error, that we manage it to improve it, we don't criticize it, we laugh at it because we're surgeons, and we brutalize each other, but within a frame that works for us, and we aim to get better. When I'm operating with a registrar who makes a mistake, it's easy to say, don't do that, that's crap. But to turn the other way and say, can we talk about this? There is a problem, it's not ignoring it. How can we make it better and why did that happen? And then you discover that, well, that's the way I thought we should do it because that's what I was told by someone else, is a different discussion than you were doing that wrong, stop doing it, don't do it again. And it's also about an honesty of yourself that you did make a mistake, that you can tell people in a confessional way, and that I am going to be better with that. Because the value, I didn't ask you because Simon had already asked the audience. Those of you who have had a moment are this whole audience. And the reason we respect and value you is because of this, because you are fixed, and you are better and more valuable than you were before because of your cracks and gold. If we learn from it, if we share about it, and if we value it. Vic talked about all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. I think with improvement, we can put each other back together again, because Kintsugi is about valuing the clinician, whatever level or discipline you're in. Valuing that person as a person, not perfection, and not minimizing them. It's about an ethos of improvement, not criticism and blame, and a value of understanding the learning that we get from understanding error, about making things better, about supporting each other, and that is Kintsugi. Domo arigato.